This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Hope your week is off to a good start on All Saints Day. And it was on this date in 1966, 55 years ago, that the New Orleans Saints were born. At a big press conference with Russell Long and Alan Ellender and John McKithen and Pete Rozelle at the Pontchartrain Hotel, and they didn't even get the main room because it went to the entertainer Maurice Chevalier. But it was on this date, November 1, 1966, that the New Orleans Saints were announced. Al Hurd, who was one of the part owners, the marvelous entertainer, trumpet player from New Orleans, he let it out of the bag in a morning show with John Pila and even said, "We're going to call them the Saints." And New Orleans Saints were born. A year later, they began play on the 17th of September at Tulane Stadium, a crowd of more than 80,000 on hand, as the Los Angeles Rams, led by George Allen, with the quarterback Roman Gabriel and the great defender Deacon Jones, were on that team. And John Gilliam returned the opening kickoff, 94 yards. Saints scored first. Bedlam at Tulane Stadium, but the Rams ultimately prevailed and won the game 27-13, and the Saints finished the season their first with a record of 3-11. They played 14 game seasons then. This is the first 17 game season. In 1978, they went to 16 games, and the Saints are now 5-2 after beating Tom Brady and the defending world champions from Tampa Bay in the Superdome. Thrilling game, 36-27 yesterday. So congratulations to Sean Payton and his New Orleans Saints. And a bit later in the hour, we will talk with Lee Brekeen, a sports follower. Louisiana Football Magazine is his deal, and we'll get his view of the LSU coaching shuffle. And he says he has some information that perhaps has not been unearthed. So we'll talk with Lee Brekeen. But we start with one of our favorite visitors, Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Louisiana. It's now been more than 11 and a half years since the inception of the Affordable Care Act, signed into law by President Obama March 22, 2010. And here we are in November of 2021. But it's still a part of the world, and efforts to repeal it have fallen short. And there is a byproduct of that called open enrollment, and it is a big part of what we do in Louisiana. It affects, in just the next few weeks, more than 2 million people in our state, more than 40% of the population. And Mike, what are we dealing with right now?
Well, you know, it's interesting when you, if I could digress for a second, I was at that game, the first Saints game, because my dad's cousin, you might remember Mooney Winston, Roy Winston, yeah.
Number 60, Minnesota. Yep. Vikings.
Yep. Long time fixture here in Baton Rouge is my dad's cousin.
Really?
Yeah. And so he invited us to the game, and we got to watch the Saints play and Gilliam run the ball back for a touchdown and all cheer. Mm-hmm. And it brought me down to the locker room afterwards, and I got a ball with all the Viking signatures on it. And that ball has vanished in our family. Like in our family, nobody could find it. It's like, what happened to that?
I played the Rams in the first game.
Well, it might've been the second one. Then I was like four. So, okay. You know,
probably was a little later in the season.
I get confused, but, it was fun, just being a part of it that first season and thinking that we had a shot, you know, after everything that happened. Moving back into the healthcare space, I wanted to make sure that everybody understands, because of the Affordable Care Act, right now we can say about 800,000 people in Louisiana have insurance coverage they probably wouldn't have if the Affordable Care Act hadn't passed. About 800,000 people. Around 700,000 of those are enrolled in the Medicaid program, which we embraced the enhancements offered by the ACA back in the summer of 2016. And during the presidential health emergency because of COVID, which is still going on, we actually have about 700,000 people in this new category, and they haven't disenrolled anyone for a year and a half. And the feds are giving us extra money to compensate for that. When the emergency is over, they'll have to go back in and check incomes. And you may see, you know, a few hundred thousand people have to seek care somewhere else. Then we have another 100,000 or so that are enrolled in the Affordable Care Act individual plans through healthcare.gov and on the outside of healthcare.gov. So it's been a huge impact for a state like Louisiana, which, as you know, we're a relatively poor state, just about the lowest household income in the nation. And so the ACA has been a critical part of getting people covered here in Louisiana. This open enrollment period, you know, it just hit me this year how many things happen at the exact same time. The Medicaid enrollment is open all year round, but for Medicare, 750,000 seniors can change plans to any plan they want, basically, between now and December 15th. So it's wide open enrollment for seniors if they're not happy with the plan they already have. And then the healthcare.gov marketplace opened November 1 today, and it's fully open for open enrollment through January 15th. And that's another 100, 150,000 people who will be able to select a plan and really maximize their choice under the Affordable Care Act. So just a lot going on all at the same time.
Well, it's a lot of people, 2 million people. So when you talk about open enrollment, what options are available?
Well, this year, I may have talked about it in an earlier appearance, but back in March of 2021, the federal government passed a bill called the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, ARPA 21, we call it. And in ARPA 21, the feds made a huge amount of money available for people buying coverage under the ACA and made that money available in income categories where people had been shut out prior to this change. So people now with six-figure incomes who aren't getting a good offer of coverage at work, or who are self-employed, or who are early retirees, can go on healthcare.gov, and even in the high six figures, I'm seeing people draw down amazing amounts of federal help, tax credits, to help them buy coverage. And that is brand new, and this is the first official open enrollment we've had where that kind of money was available. We know a lot of people bought their ACA-compatible plans but didn't buy them on healthcare.gov, didn't try to take advantage of federal help. This year would be the year to do it. Go back, take a look, make sure you're getting all of the assistance you can get. It's a big deal this year.
Well, can we cut our investment in healthcare if we make a choice? It's open enrollment. Is that what this is about?
Well, you certainly can get a lot more options on your premiums than you could in previous years.
So when I say cut our investment, that also usually means a cut in coverage, doesn't it?
Well, it depends, but yeah, it can. We have all this new money in healthcare.gov has attracted some more carriers into the marketplace for this open enrollment. So previously, last couple of years, when it was tougher sledding, you would see only the incumbents, the guys who were embedded in Louisiana, like Blue Cross. We weren't going anywhere. So we toughed it out. We lost money here and there. But, you know, it's part of our mission, serving people in Louisiana. Now that the money's getting better, outside entities, United Healthcare and Better, are starting to come back into the marketplace. What I want to make everybody clear about is you're going to see some prices this year that are much lower than you've seen in any other year. Please, please make sure the doctor that you want to use is covered by these new plans and that they cover the drugs that you want to use in these new plans. That is not a given. Some of the new plans we're seeing coming into the market have very narrow geographic networks. They have $0 out-of-network coverage. So even if you accidentally use a doctor outside of your network, they won't cover a penny. And their drug formularies are smaller than what we're used to. So it's critical if you're going to shop for a new plan and you see a price point you really haven't seen before and you like it, please make sure that your doctor will take that coverage and that your pharmacy will as well.
So you may end up paying more on the back end.
Yes.
If you go for the lower investment on the front side.
Worst thing that can happen to you is you really need care from a particular doc and you go and he rejects your insurance choice. That is heartbreaking.
877-217-5757 is your number for Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. And you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Our signature support is from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And Mike Berto is a person who I believe knows as much or more about healthcare in Louisiana than anybody on the planet. And it is a moving target. Each year brings new developments, and the Affordable Care Act really changed matters. And Of course, every year there is an attempt to undo the Affordable Care Act, and that affects not only how you analyze things, Mike, but certainly if that were to happen, it would affect providers like Blue Cross.
You know, the parts of the ACA that seem to be wrangling people the most in this day and age really don't have anything to do with the individual coverage that's offered on healthcare.gov, but the tens of thousands of pages of regulation that have been spawned by the ACA that tell employers how they have to offer coverage. I think there's more resistance there and more escapism, people really trying to figure out how to get around these rules and compliance regulatory material because they're expensive. It costs a lot of money to comply with the ACA if you're a business owner. And so that's the part I think that's going to attract the legal and regulatory attention going forward. It's not going to be about whether there's an individual mandate or how much you buy on healthcare.gov or whether they provide money. It's going to be about companies.
And we'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Eakster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and there is still time to get it under the wire with Mike Berto as we finish our conversation with him. 877-217-5757 to visit with the Chief Healthcare Officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield in Louisiana, the economist who knows the lay of the land, and it is a moving target. And there is this thing called open enrollment, which affects more than 2 million of our citizens in Louisiana, the state with 4.8 million residents. So lots of people affected. And what are the deadlines, Mike?
Yeah, if you're getting insurance through your job, that's about a million people right there who are going to have to make a decision on their workplace benefits in the next 3 months. And you're about to turn 65. Please talk to your HR folks. But in general, the Medicare deadlines are 3 months before and 3 months after the month you turn 65. If you want to change plans after that, you have to do it during what's called the annual enrollment period, which is going on right now, October 7th through December 15th. You have to make your changes by 12/15 for them to be effective. In the individual market, today is the first day of open enrollment on healthcare.gov. We're just launching now. And if you want a plan that starts on January 1, you must pick it by December 15th. If you want to go longer, you can go all the way to January 15th and pick a plan that starts on February 1st. So it just depends on what you want your effective date to be.
All right. John in New Road says, does Blue Cross cover the 13,000 patients, he says, in the medical marijuana program?
Sure. If they buy insurance from Blue Cross, we'll cover all their needs, but not their weed. So, you know, they're on their own there.
So even if it's for medicinal purposes, okay, which is presumed to be the...
Here's the deal on that. There is a prescription drug called Epidiolex, which is pharmaceutical grade, highly purified CBD oil that is in our formularies. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the stuff you order on the internet or the stuff you get through the stores that may have some THC contamination, we're out. We don't cover that.
All right. And another listener, this is Tracy at the Capitol, noting that your figure of that 700,000 people covered by Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
In Louisiana.
Yeah. That's the one, the new coverage, the people who are in the new category since July of 2016, the total coverage is, by my estimation, closing on 2 million people now.
In Louisiana?
In Louisiana, in Medicaid, yes.
Under the Affordable Care Act?
Under Medicaid in general, Medicaid and new Medicaid.
But now it's all within
altogether,
that program.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, closing on 2 million.
2 million out of,
out of 4.7.
Yeah, over 40% of the population.
Yes.
So why would any politician in his or her right mind, Tracy asks, want to shut this down in Louisiana?
I don't know the answer to that. You know, I'm often asked to read politicians' minds, and I consistently defer. So, you know, you're on your own.
Well, you know, you can make a case for or against the Affordable Care Act, but we are a state that probably benefits as much or more than any state, proportionately than any state in the country.
There's no doubt. Last number I saw was we're getting about $3 in D.C. aid for every dollar of taxes we submit upstream to D.C. So we do very well in terms of funding from Washington to Louisiana, really well.
Well, I don't think Mike Reitz would mind me repeating him, and Mike's been gone a while, but he headed your company. Good man.
Yes.
And a straight shooter. And he's a very conservative man, but he said that the problem, and I think he said this on the air, is that you got a plan that probably had too many bells and whistles going in, and yet the Republicans, instead of trying to tweak it, they just want to kill it. They want to kill it. So when those are the two options, we got a problem, right?
Yeah. You don't want to ever be in a, you know, up against the wall fish or cut bait situation. We're kind of seeing that play out now, if you think about it, in the House of Representatives. And it's not good for the country, really, when people are so firm in their beliefs. But the biggest concern that I have about Medicaid becoming 40% of the population is Medicaid pays providers at a very low reimbursement level. And I'm not talking about just low, they only make a little bit of money. I'm talking about 30 or 40 points below wholesale. That's what Medicaid pays when their patients seek care. So the bigger Medicaid gets in Louisiana, the more upward pressure it's going to put on your insurance premiums and also on the Medicare program, because Medicaid pays a very low amount of money for the care that they buy for their people. And I mean, if they paid break even to the hospitals, break even to the docs, nobody would care, but it's not even close to that. So that's going to be an ongoing concern. Mm-hmm. How is the mix of payments going to be as we shift more people to a below wholesale cost model? That's going to be something we're going to be facing in the future. It's going to be hard to deal with.
877-217-5757. We got about 4 minutes to go with Mike Berto. We'll try to get to a few of you, and there is one line open if you'd like to grab it. Paul in Opelousas, please be brief. Paul, you're on. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mike. I'm just trying to, in fact, ask the show a question. This: what is the best independent authority to help someone walk through this maze of insurance changes and upgrades and everything? You know, I'm not saying that, you know, Mike is biased, but a good option for an elderly person to say, go to and ask an honest question.
Absolutely.
On how to rearrange their thing.
Yes, that is a brilliant question. There are licensed agents in this state who are regulated by the state who have to behave in a very specific manner. And if we're talking about a Medicare patient, no matter which Medicare plan someone enrolls in, agents get paid exactly the same amount of money. Exactly. So they don't have any incentive to steer you to one plan or another other than your own needs and your own quality. So you can trust licensed agents who sell Medicare plans in the state, especially if they cover Healthy Blue, which is the one we offer. They really will tell you, yes, this is a good plan for you. And I've heard them say many times, this is not what we don't have what you need.
All right. And another listener notes going back many years now that Mike writes on this show noted that once a benefit is provided, that it's almost impossible to take it away. And one of the big benefits of the Affordable Care Act, writes, I think it's Delia, she writes, is the coverage for pre-existing conditions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now that's not going to be taken away, I don't think.
It's impossible for me to visualize them going backwards on that. I mean, we're not selling homeowners insurance anymore or car insurance. You wouldn't expect your car company to cover the wreck you had 3 weeks ago, right, if you signed up today. But we're responsible for the health of everything you've ever, every crazy thing you've ever done to yourself in your life. When you come to us and say, I want a Blue Cross policy, from that moment on, all those collective problems become our problem. So we have a huge incentive to try to keep you healthy.
Well, what incentives are there for people who are in good shape?
Well, the really good news is that the better shape you're in, the less you'll have to use your health insurance. And let's face it, you know, the era of the $500 annual deductible are over. It's thousands of dollars now for most people's coverage. And so you may go through a year, checkups are free. Usually you can get a nutritionist visit once a year without having to spend any money at all. Uh-huh. So the real incentive in taking care of yourself is minimizing how much you have to spend out of pocket to use up your deductibles.
All right. Well, the Affordable Care Act continues to be a hot potato. And
yes.
Remember, John McCain came within his vote of having it changed, and it did not happen. McCain went thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Do we have time for David in Atlanta? David, you're on. Good morning. Please be brief.
David.
Hi, David.
I just want to thank President Biden. Evidently, one of the measures that will pass in his social infrastructure plan is to extend to states like Georgia, where the Republicans did not have the decency to extend the expanded Medicare. And I know people personally who are not insured in Georgia and will be insured. And I think that is a great act of mercy and goodness on the part of the president and the Democrats.
Yeah, we're essentially the only state in the SEC that has expanded Medicaid, other than Arkansas. So when you look at Florida, Georgia, those states, they have not taken up that generous Medicaid.
There are about 14 states led by Republican governors.
Yeah, I think there's 12 left that have done nothing.
Absolutely nothing. So 12. And they've had 11 and a half years to do it.
Yep.
And if Bobby Jindal were still the governor, I suspect we would not have done it here because he philosophically was against it.
There you go again.
And there are people who believe that was the right thing. But as we stated, a couple of million people in Louisiana benefited from it. Mike, always a pleasure. Let's do it again soon. Thanks
yes.
for coming in.
Get your vaccines. I had my booster this week.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana on the first day of November 2021. And sometime this month, LSU will probably have the announcement of a new football coach. And right now, LSU is preparing for a game this Saturday at Tuscaloosa against the defending national champs from Alabama. I see the odds of LSU winning in Las Vegas have been pegged at 5.5%. And remember, it was 2 years ago that LSU went into Tuscaloosa and defeated Alabama 46-41, and that enabled Coach O and Joe Brady and Joe Burrow and all the other cast of luminaries to win the national title and go 15-0, and some believe that was the greatest team in college football history. Well, it's a whole different story now since the championship of January of last year, which is only 22 months ago, not even quite 22 months, LSU is 9-9. And Coach O is a lame duck. He's been fired, but he's agreed to coach the remainder of the season. And now we have this jockeying over who succeeds him. And one of the names, of course, as you would expect, was former LSU coach Nick Lou Saban, who has now 7 national championships in the bag. He turned 70 over the weekend on Halloween, as in yesterday. But he is, of course, the greatest coach in LSU history. And I know Scott Woodward has said if he had Saban as his coach, he could sell 100,000 season tickets and increase ticket prices, and fans would be more than willing to pay the difference in what it would take. The question is whether Saban has any interest at this point in his career of coming back to Baton Rouge. And the answer is probably no, but you never know. But beyond him, a lot of other outstanding coaches have been mentioned, and Scott Woodward is a man who usually tries to make a big splash when he hires a coach, as he did with Kim Mulkey when he named her the basketball coach at LSU, as he did with Coach Johnson, the new baseball coach, and as he did at Texas A&M when he hired Jimbo Fisher as the new football coach at College Station. And with us to talk about it is a guy who covers prep sports but has contacts with coaches, as you can imagine, from all over the country. Lee Brekeen, the owner of Louisiana Football Magazine, the preeminent prep publication since 1996, is on the line with us. And Lee, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jim. Glad to be on today.
What are your thoughts about the search?
Well, you know, you hit on a lot of good key points there. I think that the fans and alumni need to take an account because everybody gets emotional, obviously, and start throwing names out on who wins a game every week. And you got to get the big hire. And I think you pointed that out. LSU is in a position financially that they can do that. They're going to go after the biggest names in the business. And I really believe that Scott Woodward will land, I said it on my podcast a few times, the big fish, one of the big coaches who will probably shock everyone. But I think it's not really a shock when you look at maybe, you know, there's always someone that might have looked LSU up through agents that you wouldn't think would be interested. But when you have 4 national championships, 3 in the last 20 years from 3 different coaches, there's a lot to sell. And like you said, the tickets need to come back. The money needs to come back. You've got to have a home run hire.
Got to have a home run hire, and some would say that some of these people mentioned even the former defensive coordinator Dave Aranda or Mel Tucker, who's suddenly the hot candidate for Michigan State, that they're not home run hires. Who would be a home run hire?
I would say the Oklahoma head coach would be a home run hire. I would say that Dabo Swinney from Clemson, who has done really all you can do, Jim, at Clemson. I mean, and the only thing that Dabo doesn't have on his resume and probably on his bucket list is he's not a coach in the SEC. And I really, you know, he's from Birmingham, Alabama, played at Alabama. People say, well, he's going to be the next Alabama coach. But I think Dabo really has an interest in the SEC. I believe the Oklahoma coach has an interest in the SEC. And let's face it, who doesn't want to be a coach in the SEC at a powerhouse program? Oklahoma's been knocked out of the playoffs by SEC teams every year. It's cost that coach two or three national championships between Alabama and Georgia and LSU and Burrow, right? But And then the same thing with Clemson. They've lost national championships to Alabama and been knocked out by some SEC schools. So, you know, it's not a reach for that to possibly happen.
Well, you talk with a lot of people. Has Dabo been contacted?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not one to just throw hearsay out. I just know that Woodward's going to contact the best coaches in the business. And I would assume that all the biggies have been contacted. I also know that Coach Kelly from Notre Dame is someone that was contacted. And, you know, I do have some information that he was one of the candidates in the beginning, but no longer a candidate because I think he's going to stay at Notre Dame. He loves Notre Dame. But that's a coach that was in it, I think, and early on, one of the people LSU approached.
That's interesting because his name has not been mentioned that much, but but he's a successful coach. Brian Kelly, who a few days ago on October 25th turned 60 years old, which I guess by today's standards is a relatively young coach. Now, Notre Dame is secretive about what it pays its coaches, but presumably they don't pay as much as other universities. You know, a lot of people take it as a great honor to coach at Notre Dame, but his overall record, for what that's worth, is quite substantial. It was mostly at Grand Valley State and Central Michigan and Cincinnati, but Brian Kelly's now been head coach, hard to believe, I'm looking, the last 12 years at Notre Dame, where he's 88-40. So he's had a good record, but has not won a national championship there. And he would be a strong candidate, but doesn't look like he's the guy. So who are the leading contenders right now, based on what you're discerning, Lee Brekeen?
I think Oklahoma's coach is the guy that I think they would probably like to have. And obviously you keep talking to Dabo Swinney until he tells you no, I mean, several times. You know, just because a coach tells you no once doesn't mean he can't change his mind in a week and sign a contract. So, and I think there's a time here, Jim, that you have to move on to your next list if you don't get the big guy that you want, meaning timing of this early signing day in December for high school football players. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the timing of hiring a coach is you want to have a coach in place before the early signing period. So that being said, I'm thinking by the Texas A&M game or right after, they have to have a coach in place to gather their first recruiting early signing class for 2022.
Well, Lincoln Riley, the coach at Oklahoma you mentioned, is only 38 years old, and he makes, according to reports, $11 million a year. So he would be somebody LSU would have to pay at least that and probably more.
And
12. Yeah, $12 million at least. And Scott has already paid $17 million for a coach to go away. We'll have to pay another $8.5 million for the assistants to go away. Paid about $10 million last year to revamp the staff of Coach O. So now we're looking at about $35 million paid on people literally not to coach. So how much?
Jim, what did he give Jimbo Fisher at A&M per year? It's a pretty good amount.
Well, he gave him a lot, but I don't know that he had to do all the things going in. How much did the previous coach get as a going away present? I don't know. And A&M, of course, has a huge endowment, huge.
Right.
And LSU has the smallest endowment in the SEC. But as we know, people will pay for football here and in lieu of other things. So I don't know if that's a consideration or not. But I do think you're right that Scott will try to make this a splash, and the only way you're going to do that is by getting somebody like Lincoln Riley or Dabo Sweeney or Nick Saban. But what if he goes with Mel Tucker? Will that sell? Will Mel Tucker, who has 3 years of head coaching experience at Michigan State, be somebody that will make the kind of splash that Scott usually makes?
Well, let me tell you a story before I give you an answer, and then I remember when Mel Tucker was hired, actually, because when Nick Saban was hired at LSU, true story, I got a phone call. I was doing recruiting for Jerry DiNardo at LSU, and they gave Nick Saban my number. So I get a call on a Sunday from Nick Saban. And, Jim, at that time, Nick was not really a well-known name at Michigan State. And he called me at 9, I'll never forget it, 9 at night, and said, meet me at the coach's office, which was by Tiger Stadium at the time, and I want to continue to try and work with you recruiting. Well, I remember showing up that morning at like 7 in the morning, and I remember this guy in a suit, and I remember he was sweating. He was so nervous, and I asked him, I said, what is your name? He said, Mel Tucker. I said, you're a coach? He said, yeah, I'm interviewing with Coach Saban today. I played for him at Michigan State. And so we walk into the LSU football office. We get in the elevator with Saban. He doesn't say a word. Saban tells the secretary to get some coffee made. Mel, you come with me. Lee, you go with Derek Dooley. And I'll never forget that, because later that year, Mel was only with LSU one season, Jim. He recruited Shreveport for LSU. And I was in Shreveport at Independence Stadium watching Morris Claiborne, who they call Mo Claiborne. And guess who's on the sideline with me? Mel Tucker.
Mel Tucker.
He's there recruiting Morris Claiborne. And so we got to hang out the whole night. It was just me and him basically on the sideline with the coaches. And I got to know Mel Tucker. So that was my little Mel Tucker story for you.
Well, he's...
To answer your question, I don't think Mel Tucker is a definitely slam dunk to leave Michigan State. You know, people assume that he would leave. He played at Michigan State. That's a little different animal. That school means a lot to him. So that's not a guarantee that he would leave.
Well, we will spend a few more minutes with the remarkable Lee Brekeen, the publisher of Louisiana Football Magazine since 1996, in its 25th year. He knows a lot about prep football and knows a lot about the coaches who are in the ranks and might be the next at LSU. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. And we're wrapping it up with Lee Brekeen, the publisher of outstanding publication about prep sports, primarily Louisiana Football Magazine, but it covers other aspects of football, which, of course, is our greatest pastime in Louisiana. And I don't think I'm exaggerating in saying that. And it's shown by the interest in what's happening right now with LSU searching for a new football coach. And LSU does have the distinction, as Lee said, of its last three coaches all winning national championships: Nick Saban, Les Miles, Ed Orgeron. And a listener, I'm going to get to a couple of questions, if you can answer them briefly, Lee. A listener, this is Holly in the Garden District, says, what about all the Title IX issues? Does that mean LSU will have to hire somebody who has presumably a clean record when it comes to matters of sexual misconduct? What are your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure about any of that, Jim. I'm just a high school recruiting guy that follows LSU football. I follow the high school prep scene. I don't know what's in place there for that, so I really can't answer that question.
Well, I think the answer is yes. Coach O would not be hired today with his record of having a restraining order against him many years ago, but still, that just would not fly in today's environment. And don't look for him to get a head coaching job of any consequence anywhere else because of that as well. And also, well, go ahead. But on another one says, I buried the lead that I need to ask you again. Here, Nick Saban just got the job in 1999, and he calls Libra Keen. Obviously, he thought you could provide him some information. What was the conversation like with him?
Very short and sweet. I mean, Jim, he's a no-nonsense guy if you ever see him in a press conference. But when he called me, it was direct. It was getting to the point. It was basically, are you Lee? Yes. I'm Nick Saban. Okay. Meet me at 7 in the morning. Let's continue recruiting. And it was like, click.
Seven.
Yeah, you know, that office doesn't open until about 8 at least. And the first thing I thought of when he hung up, I said, well, first of all, I had to go look up who is Nick Saban. I said, oh, yeah, the guy that just beat LSU at Michigan State and then the Independence Bowl, name wasn't huge. And then I thought, well, the office doesn't open till 8. How do I, what does he look like? Where do I park? I mean, I got to get in the gate. I don't have a car. The field doesn't open till 8 o'clock. So I'm trying to figure all this. It was very cold. Like I said, I saw Mel Tucker. And I said, Mel, man, good to see you. You're going in too. All right. Someone else is going in the building besides me. And
all right. So
and then when we saw Nick in the parking lot.
Well, this is 7 in the morning, and he starts early, as we know. But was he disheveled? Was he in his pajamas, or was he dressed appropriately? How did he look?
He looked like he was going to a wedding. He had a suit on that was, obviously pressed, and he looked, like he was applying for the job. He
looked like the guy in the Affleck commercials, right?
Same suit, I believe. So, I mean, but he, there was no talking in the elevator, like not one word with Mel Tucker, me and Nick. I mean, it was like and Mel was sweating. I mean, and he played for Nick. He was still nervous. And we get out the elevator and all he says is, look, you go with Derek Dooley and Mel, you come with me. And Derek Dooley will tell me what you talked about, Lee, and we'll go from there. That was it.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. First appearance on this show from Libra Keen. Hopefully we'll visit with you again soon. I appreciate your insights and in saying that LSU actually talked with the coach at Notre Dame who said he was not interested. That's a new development. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
And we're joined now by a gentleman who has some information about something in Louisiana that many may not be aware of. And I didn't know the extent of this, that these orphan wells, not to be confused with Orson Welles, but orphan wells, 4,628 of them in Louisiana, have been left unplugged in countless communities, and plugging these wells will be beneficial, as you would expect, to the environment and the economy, according to this gentleman who is with us from the Environmental Defense Fund, Adam Peltz, the senior attorney. And good morning to you, Adam.
Great. Good morning, Jim.
Well, tell us the potential hazards of these so-called orphan wells that are obviously quite rampant in our state.
Sure. Well, there's as you say, there's at least 4,600 of these wells scattered around the state, especially in the northern part. But really, there you can find them in almost any parish. And the problem with these wells, which are supposed to be plugged at the end of their life, but when they're not plugged, they can contaminate groundwater, emit air toxics that have health implications, reduce property values, and cause climate change. So it's a whole basket of problems.
Well, oil and gas drilling, according to the Environmental Defense Fund, has caused devastating environmental problems because of these unplugged wells. How hazardous are they?
Well, as an aggregate, they have been causing problems in Louisiana around the country for 100 years. But the good news about these wells is it's a pretty easy fix. You just have to plug them. Most operators plug their wells at the end of their life. But when an operator goes bankrupt, the responsibility falls to the state to plug. And Louisiana, like many other states, have had underfunded plugging program for a long time. And part of the bipartisan infrastructure package that's currently being debated in Congress has $4.7 billion to pass through to the states to support the plugging of these wells. And Louisiana alone will be eligible for up to $250 million, which should wipe out this whole population. So that's some very promising news.
877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number. In our remaining time with Adam Peltz, Senior Attorney, Environmental Defense Fund. How many dollars would it take to plug 4,600 orphan wells? It would seem that would be real money.
Yes, well, it would pretty much take all that $250 million I just mentioned, because some of these can get pretty expensive to plug, and when there's been contamination, that needs to get cleaned up. But because this population of 4,600 is kind of only scratching the surface, and there's many more out there and many currently active wells that might become orphans, Louisiana has an opportunity to undertake some policy reform to try to reduce the number of these in the future. And Governor Edwards, as part of his climate initiative task force, has five proposed recommendations to help do so that include bonding reform, orphan well fees, and job training. So the state is taking the bull by the horns on this.
Why haven't the oil and gas companies been held more accountable?
Well, that's part of what some of these reforms will do. They'll increase the amount of money that operators have to put up in advance to make sure if they go bankrupt, there's money available. And they'll have to put fees into to a kitty so that when wells fall through the cracks, the state can pay for their plugging. Operators will really need to step up on this issue going forward.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Adam Peltz from the Environmental Defense Fund. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Good morning. Do you know that our U.S. policy was changed in 2013, and up until then, it was forbidden to sell U.S. oil on the open market? But now, since 2013, our oil can be sold on the open market. I think that changed.
All right. What about that development that Phil cites? Do you know anything about that?
So it's true. It's true that it's been made easier for exports of U.S. oil in recent years. Although that hasn't helped the number of orphans out there. You still have to clean up after yourself when you're done.
Well, EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, partnered with researchers at McGill University to develop maps that show where these wells are located. In Louisiana, do we have access to that information?
Yes. Anyone can find our map online at edf.org/orphan well map. And we got the data from the Louisiana Department of Natural Resources, so you can check out the Louisiana State website for similar information.
Well, the REGROW Act, which you have cited, I think it invests almost $5 billion in plugging and cleaning up documented orphan wells across the country. So we talked about what at least $250 million would be necessary in Louisiana. And we have a good proportion of them, 81,000 across 28 states. But if we've got almost 5,000 of them in Louisiana, then that's pretty serious. That's a large percentage.
Louisiana is one of the epicenters. Yeah, Louisiana is one of the main parts of the country that has a lot of these wells, along with Texas and Oklahoma. And there's another large swath of them in Appalachia.
Well, in these wells,
a lot of it's from historical drilling that goes back into the 19th century before there were regulations.
And it is serious business. They can leak toxic chemicals, and by doing so, endanger water sources, emit methane, of course, a powerful greenhouse gas. So they need to be plugged and plugged very quickly, don't they?
Yeah, and it's a win for everyone, because plugging these wells is a job creation engine, especially in communities with the oil field service industry.
Thank you, Adam Peltz, Environmental Defense Fund. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services. Back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.